Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
I want to return now to how commercial and office rental property markets are actually holding up with the advent of hybrid working. Is it still worth investing in? Are there new ways to ensure a return? Or is there an inevitable crash going to happen anytime soon? I'm delighted to be joined by Colm Lauder. He's the chairman of the Whitehall Group, principal at Lingard Capital Advisors, and he's also a columnist with the Business Post. And it was his column last week that caught my eye, and I decided maybe to invite him in for a chat. So, Colm, you're very welcome to the programme.
Good morning, Bobby. Thanks. It's great to be here.
So maybe we can just maybe set out the market. We look at vacancy rates. We look at, I suppose, new people. The way people use offices has changed. What's actually happening out there as you see it today?
Look, you mentioned it, Bobby, in your introduction. You said that, you know, the market, particularly in offices, is holding up. And, you know, that seems like an oddity to many observers. You know, we see situations where vacancy rates across most, you know, developed economies are close to record highs. So there's a lot of available space out there. There's a lot of space being sublet by tenants, you know, so-called grey space. And we're also still seeing plenty of cranes around most of our cities. So, you know, how are rents holding up?
Yeah.
Vacancy is pretty strong. And, you know, the argument around that is, well, the market has also changed dramatically in its post-COVID years. You know, office tenants want very different types of buildings. So what we see as vacant as we walk around our cities are not necessarily relevant buildings to modern office occupiers. And if you look at, sort of say, take the examples of Dublin, you know, we've about 15, 16% of vacancy in the office sector across the market. But the majority of those buildings, a modern tenant, particularly in the tech sector, business services, financials, they don't want those sort of buildings. You know, they want the new, green, energy efficient, shiny space, which in reality is only 6 or 7% vacancy. So what's happened over the last 2.5, 3 years is a dramatic polarization in the way we pick our office buildings and where we choose what we want to be based in.
Now, there's a lot of things I want to ask you, but one of them is like the way the modern office is set out. So you talk about things like ground floors that typically would have had desks and would have been used, but now they're gyms, they're retail shops, they're wellbeing centres. But is the landlord having to pay for that? So is this sort of masqueraded in the yield somewhere that while the rent may be held up, but the landlord is having to give all these other things in order to entice tenants into a building? Is that one thing that's happening?
In a lot of cases, there are examples of that. And what the landlord is trying to do is to make their building more relevant, more attractive, and more competitive with tenants. So they will reconfigure their offering. Now, in the normal market, you know, going back before this big push for amenities, which mostly came from the tech sector, a landlord would say, well, the market's a bit softer. I'll give you a longer rent-free period. I'll give you a contribution towards your fit out, so your desks and your furniture, or perhaps I'll give you a break clause so you have a bit more flexibility in your lease. Now, a lot of that arguably has already been maxed out. And you know, if you start to sort of concentrate your lease length too much, then you go to your bank and they will say, well, hang on, that's not long enough of an income stream. So the landlord's evolved. And they've been looking at their space in very different ways. And like you mentioned about the ground floor sort of thing, it's quite rare now you see for the brand new stock being built where they actually rentalize or put offices on a ground floor. They rather put in amenities.
Yeah.
So they could have a gym in there. They could have common areas, town halls. And that's all part of the tenant appeal. That helps win tenants, but of course, there's a cost. And that cost is being mostly borne, particularly in weaker markets, by the landlord.
And if we cut to the chase on this, or the kernel of the argument here, where a landlord doesn't want to cut the headline rent, that main reason being that it'll affect the capital value of the business, right, or of the building. So is that then a scenario that we have landlords aren't as overborrowed as they were back in the last crash? Is that maybe cushioning this somewhat in the loan-to-value ratios are stronger than they were the last time we crashed? And maybe that's why we haven't seen an actual crash yet. Would that be, are interest rates at play here?
Yeah, look, see, the property value is a function of two things. It's your rents and it's your base rates and yields.
Yeah.
And obviously, your rents have been steady, so there's been no real drag on your values by rental movements. But base rates have gone up, so capital values have fallen as a consequence of yields rising. But if we look at, you know, how the market's evolved in terms of, you know, the landlord's positioning and what they want to do around rents, they're in a natural incentive to keep the headline rent at a relatively steady level, because that affects the wider marketplace. If we look then about how that's been played out in different markets, you're bang on about the point on loan to value and debt. You compare 2007, 2008, the level of debt in the Irish office market, our retail, our industrial is very, very low. And that's replicated across most European markets.
Which means the landlord can hang on longer.
They can hang on, and there's less likelihood of being distressed sellers out there. And that's one of the key points, is that there's very few forced sales.
Okay.
And so this price realization we saw quite quickly, let's say in London 2009, 2010, isn't happening because there's no forced seller.
Okay. Another thing I wanted to ask you about, we're focusing on the shiny new buildings for the tech giants and all that. What about older George in Dublin, you know, which I, as a anecdotally, would say, from an office perspective, is on its knees.
Mm.
So that there's clearly different things happening in that market where, you know, they don't have the energy ratings. They're not probably fit for purpose to put in gyms and God knows what else. So, but is there a crash in that market?
Not necessarily, because you know, some of that older, smaller floor plate stock is more adaptable to alternative uses.
Yeah.
Like if you take a 1990s built office building down the IFSC, it's a purpose-built office with air conditioning systems, all that sort of thing. It's next to impossible to convert that to something else. And again, obviously residential. You know, Georgian houses and Victorian and Regency townhouses were originally residential. So converting them back is a much more easier move if you can get beyond, obviously, the conservation rules and some of the fire safety issues which are presented. So, you know, the offices that we would see as being most inappropriate to modern office use could actually be suitable for something else.
Okay, so they're more likely, and that, I suppose that does sound logical,
yeah,
that they're more likely to return to accommodation of some form.
It provides a floor for the valuation,
yeah,
which is, and it provides an alternative use. And at the same time, you know, there are always tenant requirements out there for different types of space. And you know, we get, you know, run away with ourselves sometimes thinking, well, you know, all of the office space needed is big buildings by US tech firms who want a few hundred thousand square feet. In reality, you know, the average letting in a city like Dublin is only about 3,500 square feet. It's SMEs, it's smaller businesses.
Yeah.
And you know, at the same time, they can't afford those brand new shinier buildings. So they will always be in need for lower cost office space.
But another thing that kind of surprises me is, and particularly when you talk about maybe SMEs or maybe something slightly bigger than an SME, that there's this wonderful opportunity for them to walk away from a massive cost,
mm-hmm,
which is probably one of their biggest costs, being their property costs, by, you know, building inherent flexibility into their business model and allowing people to work from home. Now, I understand many of them are locked into leases, and walking away from a lease isn't as easy as one might think. But as time goes on, I'm again surprised that there hasn't been more downsizing in that space.
Well, if you look at the business profiles, and it is more in the SME and mid-sized business space who are actually returning to the office quicker than the major international and multinational firms. So if you walk around most cities, it's that smaller cohort of businesses which are more present in their locations. And perhaps you could argue they also need to be more present in their office in terms of collaboration, business development, etc., within colleagues. So requirements are different and they vary, particularly in smaller firms.
Okay, well, we'll have to leave it there, Colm. I'll have you back again if you'll come back to talk to me, because this is a fascinating subject and one I absolutely want to return to.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.